Prepare yourself for invasion. This is Indie Invasion.
Hey guys, what's happening? It is Mac and Eric with the Indie Invasion podcast, and we have a really cool, awesome guest because if you have listened to any of our shows, you already know that we are completely and utterly enamored with Twisted from Demented Games. That's right, just a little bit.
Just a little.
Just a little. And today we have one of the creators of Twisted with us. We have Peter Overton. Say hello, Peter.
Hello, how you going?
Outstanding. Eric, you can go ahead and say hello too. I forgot to tell you to say hello.
No.
No,
I want to say hello now.
Too late now. It's too late now. Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. Well, we usually just like to jump right in, Peter, and talk about the game. Some of these questions, we already know the answers to. We're just asking them for the listeners because for me, I'll tell you how I found Twisted. I found the first model I found was Dorothy for the Guild of Harmony. And now I found it. I was going to use it for a different game because as most people that know me know, I just like miniatures, and I'll stick them in whatever game I'm playing if they're cool looking.
Yep.
So I found her, and I was using her for a game called Shadowsea, and I didn't actually realize that there was a game that accompanied the model because I think I got the model off of eBay. And I realized there was a game that accompanied it. And then as I was planning for Coastal Con, the early stages of it, about 10 months out for planning for Coastal Con, I found the Demented Games website and I lost my mind. I lost my mind because I was looking for independent game developers. That was how I ended up finding it. And I have just been completely floored by the game. So I will start out with saying thank you very much. And Sebastian, for creating an awesome
game. My pleasure.
Yeah, and then in turn, he's infected the rest of the gaming group with his obsession.
Yeah, I have detected that sort of.
I get that a lot when we all get together. Everybody just blames me for the games that they play. And I tell them, I didn't make you buy it. I just told you how cool it was. So really, it comes down, it's really your fault and Sebastian's fault.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
I just told you.
Yeah, we're the originators of the illness.
Yes, the illness. I like that. I like that. So, Eric, why don't you fire off? You had that good opener question. Why don't you go ahead and fire that one off, buddy?
All right, Peter, something I'd like to ask our developers that we get on interviews and stuff is basically how or what game kind of got you into the hobby of gaming? What was, you know... Was it a card game, board game, a miniatures game?
Yeah, righto. For me, I guess, being as old as I am, started in with my brothers essentially playing World War II Napoleonic war games with the old Airfix HOOO models, whatever the plastic ones. I couldn't actually put my finger on a rule set we were playing at the time. That's whatever my brothers actually found. I was kind of only a kid at the time, so they'd give me the rules and I'd go, all right, I'll play. And from that, in the late 70s, 79, I think, started playing D&D. Some mates, brother found that. That was basically my gaming from then till probably the 90s. But I in a visit to our local game store, found the Confrontation models, the French brand. Uh-huh. Bought a couple of those to use for D&D because they were awesome. And much like Mac, I went, there's a game that goes with these. and being at that point, being largely a painter, like I painting miniatures was kind of my main hobby apart from playing D&D once or twice a week. I thought, I'll look into this game. And it was only a small-scale skirmish game, sort of 8 to 10 models aside, maybe a few more. So, I can paint up these models the way I want to paint them and play this game. That seemed like a good chance to buy more models for a reason, which, yay.
Oh, wait a minute. You need a reason to buy them? Oh, man, I'm not really wrong.
Technically not, but, it helps if you justify it to yourself in some
exactly.
fashion. So I played that for a while. Unfortunately, that game folded due to reasons. Then moved on to a couple of other games similar, Helldorado, which is similar to that. Nice miniatures again, great skirmish game. Had a dabbled in Infinity for a while because they had great models, good skirmish game. And it's about that time, once I sort of moved to that point, I think I stopped gaming for a little bit there because the sort of the guys I game with kind of disappeared. Painted for a while longer and then got Twisted started, you know, through Sebastian and I meeting up in Sydney with a couple other guys, which is interesting.
That was actually, that kind of leads into our second question is, so you meet Sebastian in Sydney.
Yep.
And, yep. You know, it's every gamer out there dreams of making their own game. Thankfully, we have you guys to actually make good ones, or else we'd be in trouble. But so you guys bump into each other. What happens from there to make you guys decide, hey, let's create our own game?
Okay. Initially, the meeting was the four guys, Sebastian, myself, Adam, and Kyle, I think the guy's name was. We're meeting up in Sydney to talk about starting a miniature painting magazine, essentially. I was there as the representative of the printing industry at the time, because it's my sort of day job. And Sebastian is, as well as being an excellent sculptor, is an awesome painter. But during that sort of day of, you know, chatting and drinking beer and generally talking nerd stuff, we kind of twigged that there really wasn't a market or enough money in a, you know, a magazine to really make it worthwhile sort of getting into. Well, as it turns out, we could have. Conversation kind of moved to this Sebastian's miniatures he was sculpting at the time and the ones he'd sculpted before. And we kind of looked at this range he had called Guild of Harmony.
Yeah.
And went, oh, maybe we could do something with that. And this sort of game idea kind of just germinated that day. Wasn't really well formed at the time. We thought, oh, skirmish game, cool models. We had a couple of ideas. Lancelot was developed on that day as an idea. This knight with this massive long gun. Originally, his gun would have been longer than it actually is, but it was, you know, convenience. We came away from that meeting with sort of a vague plan of doing something. Probably the next month or so, it sort of started to firm up. And we started to write the rules, which is an interesting thing to do when you haven't done it before.
So that was your first foray into writing?
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool stuff.
Okay. Yeah. Anything other than, you know, adventures for my D&D mates.
Right.
Which, of course, leads in. It's a similar thing. It's the game development thing, essentially. You're not doing the actual mechanics. You're just doing the scenario, as it were. So there's a bit of experience from that. But it's an interesting thing when you develop a rule set. It's a skill. And I was, you know, assisted in that by some friendly folk. Because it's something you can get very wrong, but we got it quite right, I think, as it turns out.
I would be inclined to agree with you. I actually managed to stumble upon some of Sebastian's old sculpts before Twisted, and I stumbled. Although I already have the models, I simply had to get them because they were in his original packaging. It was just a little Ziploc bag with a card in it that said Guild of Harmony on it. Yep. And so I've got them, and I've got them still in the bag because there's no reason to put them together because mine are already painted. I have Maria Poppet and Albert.
Yeah.
Actually. So
the one where they're together, they're sort of holding hands. Is that the one?
No, they're not together. They're not together. I haven't stumbled on that one. I thought someone custom did that one. That was an actual...
They're originally designed as one piece. Like, not one piece, but one model. So they sort of go together as she's floating up and he's kind of holding onto her. Which is one of the reasons for the ability that Albert now has in Twisted, which is that sort of hang on where you can kind of grab on and float with
it. I see gears turning in your head.
Yeah, so essentially what you just told me, Peter, is I somehow need to track that down because I need to have that.
It sounds like you might already have it. That model you have should be that one. There'll be two separate bodies, but they should join together.
Oh,
I didn't. In some arcane way.
I didn't even look. I didn't open them because I didn't. Yeah. It never even occurred to me because I've seen that picture, in the interwebs. I've seen that picture with Maria and Albert, and I just thought, oh, that's cool. Somebody modified them a little bit, did a little custom work, and put them together. That's a cool diorama.
That's how they were designed originally. Okay, it could be wrong.
I might not be playing tonight. Might be breaking out my models and see if I can get those bad boys together. Well, I'm excited now. I could be done right now. I'm excited now. I got all the information I wanted out of that. What else you got there, Eric? Throw something else at him. He looks like he's ready.
Yeah, he needs a breather, I think, Peter.
I broke Mac on you. I'm sorry.
So in the game, Twisted, you have like this great, all-knowing, greater power called the Engine. And kind of wanted to know, what was the inspiration for this? Where did you come up with the idea of the Engine? Was it a story idea first? Because it sounds like, you know, those that know Twisted, it's a very narrative game. Or was it game mechanics that kind of helped that develop first?
Once again, it kind of came from that first day when we were talking about it. I'm fairly certain, in somewhat of a fog of beer at the time, there was a discussion of building some randomness into the game. I've always been a fan of kind of these kind of unexpected things in games. It's one of the things I've always liked. And the fact that the players can't completely control stuff amuses me. it's kind of, I guess it's kind of the antithesis of this kind of, you see the phrase called math hammer. You know, if people play Warhammer just by basically working out the math and going, right, that's my army. That's to me, that's just not how you play a game. That's just kind of, you know, you might as well be playing, I don't know, something different, but not a war game. A war game's all about story.
Yeah,
war game's all about stories for me. I mean,
right.
Probably since those early days when I played with my brothers, I'd always pick one soldier. And so this is me. Yeah.
Right.
This guy here, this little, you know, guy with the red hat, that's me. I think in the early games of 40K that I played, but I did play 40K very briefly when it was Rogue Trader with some mates. And it was much more fun game then in those days. A lot more narrative
I remember well. That's when I started 40K was Rogue Trader.
Yeah. We had a particularly memorable battle once where there was Imperial Guard versus Marines, I think. And I was GM because you kind of needed a GM then. And I had a little bunch of Eldar in a building in the middle. And these Eldar would sort of look, you know, like the movie Zulu, kind of defending themselves against these Marauding forces coming from both sides. There's one guardsman who came to be known as the Calabrian in that game. He's still legendary to this day because he could not get killed. The Marines were firing missiles at him and plasma guns. This guy just would not die. And it was hilarious. And that's the sort of thing I really wanted to get
right
into Twisted, I guess, is that kind of attachment you feel to each and every model on the table. You don't sort of want your Erkin, you're not going to throw him away because he's kind of cool. He's got this little pig face, you know. Going, right. How fun's that? You know, I don't want him to die. You know,
I don't want Porker to die. He's in a story I'm writing. No, Porker's going to stay
exactly.
Alive.
Yeah. Which is, you'll note that in the rules, I only ever use the phrase out of action. I never actually use killed because I don't want them to be dead.
Right.
Mm-hmm. If during your games, if they go down, I don't want you to say, well, Fagin's dead. He can't come back in the next game. He's just out of action. He's, you know, been hurt or he's.
Right.
You know, in Fagin's case, decided discretion is the better part of valor and bug it off somewhere, you know, kind of that sort of thing. So it's a quite a deliberate decision not to make anyone sort of die, as it were, in Twisted, you know. Where was I? Where was I going with
the randomness of the death.
Randomness. Yes, sorry. I got sidetracked there, which is common enough. Yeah. Initially, there was the engine was. Was represented by a dice, which I have one of on my shelf somewhere behind me. Big D12, big 12-sided dice. And that had dice, the dice had minuses and pluses on it and an engine, the engine on it. So basically every turn for every model, you'd roll that dice. And
so how do I get one of those?
There was only ever one made.
Oh, no. I guess I better get in touch with ChessX and see what I can do. Yeah.
I found the biggest D12 I could find. If I could find it somewhere, somewhere. Oh, just go grab it. Just hang on a tick.
Okay.
Oh, we gotta see this sucker.
Yeah, we definitely need to see this.
Sorry, shut off briefly there. Can you see that?
Oh, yeah.
That's it. That's the
original. There it is.
Yeah. Oh, the engine symbol.
It's a little piece of twisted history right there.
Yeah, so you'd roll that dice every turn for a character, and you'd plus or minus from stats or the engine symbol on that was the eye of the engine, effectively card, which devolved into. But that eventually phased its way out because it was, in fact, a bit too random.
Well, the cards, and again, just my opinion, because I'm very much a narrative gamer as well.
Yep.
I think the cards could potentially have broken the game. You know, there
absolutely.
Was definitely that potential for it. But they are such a cool compliment to what's happening instead of that, because it's never really too, well, sometimes it can be critical and game changing. A perfect example was we had a game. It may have even been our first official, we know what we're doing and don't have to look at the rule book every 5 minutes game. And it was Raul and I, and I was kind of running the rules. Raul was playing, and it was the very last turn. It was the very last dice roll, and Hercule had to make a finesse check to interact with the door.
Yep.
He had two actions, and he couldn't make it to the door because Bill was in the way.
Yep.
Well, Bill tempted fate on his turn and disappeared from the board. So that Hercule didn't have to do anything except walk up to the door. And the best part about it was he failed his finesse roll, and it was the last roll of the game. Like, the engine favored you, man, and you dropped the keys or whatever.
It's changed its mind. It may have got rid of Bill just so it could do that to Hercule.
Right, right.
It's one of the things I actually like about the engine. It's never explicitly stated in the rules that it's, I've always kind of thought about it like it's got a plan. Like, it knows what it's doing to some degree. But to an outside observer, it can appear like a four-year-old, you know. It does stuff, and then it goes, nope, I don't want to do that anymore. I'll do this.
I'll tell you what it reminds me of is you and I were talking a little bit about that the other day, about the, you used that exact phrase, like a petulant 4-year-old. And what it reminded me is, I don't know if you've ever read any Piers Anthony books, the Zant novels. Well, there's, all of his books are filled with puns, and there's this computer, and it's basically the engine, but in a silly cartoonish kind of world. And the engine reminds me of computer so much. It just blows my mind.
Yeah. It may have come partly from, there's an old role playing game, which I think is still around, called Paranoia.
Oh, I remember Paranoia.
The computer in that, I kind of like that computer just sort of manipulating stuff.
Right.
And you know, kind of just, regardless of what your plans are, it wants to do something else, and you're kind of buggered if that's the case, you know.
Yeah, well, I think it's a fantastic mechanic.
Yeah.
So, my next question for you is this. For the people listening, I would venture to say that Eric and I are probably safe on this one and don't require the explanation, but if you had somebody brand new who was going, hey, what is Twisted about? How do you pick? Tell our listeners what exactly is going on in the world of Twisted.
In terms of like story, are we talking?
Overarching arc. What is Twisted about?
Yeah, so basically, the engine, which we just discussed, has been sort of lurking, partly unknown. Although the backstory, as it's developing, there is some sort of knowledge. It's sort of been controlling and manipulating the world to be the way it wants it to be, whatever that might be for. We don't know its greater purpose. So it's been hiding away, kind of quietly changing stuff to suit itself. Throughout the world are the body of the engine is concealed. No one knows where it is, its main sort of hive, if you know what I mean. But it has nodes all over the world. Wherever these nodes are, it's where population centers tend to spring up. So it's, you know, London or Paris or wherever, probably have a node in it because that's where people tend to gather. Or it wants people to gather. One of these nodes, the London node, has been discovered by Fagan and Bill Sykes and the gang of street thieves that are the Dickensians. initially, you know, Bill was always an unpleasant chap, as we know. Nancy, his nice girlfriend, who was lovely, lovely lady, and all the street kids that Fagan had as pickpockets and whatnot. Fagan found the node. I started to fiddle with it a bit, and they decided it might be something they could use for their own gain, and interfered further. And during that process, the node was triggered in an attempt to defend itself. It as the name of the game suggested, it twisted the faction slightly. Oliver, who is once like the one in the novel, is a little lad, blonde, you know, meek and mild, became this raging, monstrous beast. The engine essentially created him at that time to kill the rest of the people. And they said, "Oh, I'll make this guy massive and he can kill everyone else, and then my problem's gone." What it didn't quite plan on is Bill has so much the same thing happening to Bill. He got nastier and bigger than he was. So right. In one of the first backstories, Bill takes out Oliver, saving everyone else, but for no other purpose than to save Fagan for later, because he was very cross at the time. So basically, they've discovered the engine and are trying to manipulate it into its node into creating their own power. The engine doesn't like this idea, but it knows that there's only so much it can do to stop it at this point. Nancy has now become an evil alchemancer, a spellcaster of sorts, and she's busily creating more of the Erkin, as the street kids have become, these little twisted sort of maniacs, sort of murderous little thugs. So she grabs children off the streets and turns them into these little vile creatures.
She used to be so nice.
It used to be so lovely. The engine in response to this had created a group, it's normally known as the Servants of the Engine. So it's group of heroes, for want of a better term. It's summoned or called to try and stop the Dickensians the best way it knows how, which is to kill them. Those heroes are drawn from throughout histories, possibly futures, even from where the game is set, which is about Victorian times. From past, so you got Lancelot the Knight from history so much, but in the game he is. He's turned up in Victorian times. He's got big armor. His armor's a metal suit, with big guns, big lance. And the servants of the engine are basically trying to stop the Dickensians from taking the game. That's the base setup for the game. There are two other factions, the Guild of Harmony and the Signs of the Sand, currently. So the Guild of Harmony are a sort of mysterious bunch of agents who are trying to variously keep the engine secret or utilize its power, depending on which faction they're from. And the Signs of the Sand is Howard Carter's, an expedition he had to Egypt. He dug up an engine of a node of the engine over there in a place called Nubd, which is an ancient city. And he's now seeking more information on the node, essentially, to see, not so much to increase his power, but to find it. He's a man who wants knowledge, and whatever right. he has to do to get knowledge is what he will do. So all these places have converged now on this London node, and they're kind of fighting in the area. That's the basic story of the game. It's kind of the engine is there; it's operating still, defending itself through its servants or its own devices as it can. Dickensians are there trying to utilize it for power. The guild are trying to keep it secret to some degree. And, Carter just wants everyone to bugger off so we can study it.
So
you can look at it.
So one of the things that I really like about what you guys did with the factions in particular is every one of the factions has a little bit of a dichotomy in it, some tension between the people, and I love that. My favorite one is the whole Fagan, Dodger, Bill, Nancy. That's my favorite one because of the Dickensian. And for those listening who want to find out, Discover Games has the rule book for you in the States, and you can get it from Demented Games in Australia. You can get it from them here too, but it's a little cheaper to get it shipped in the States if you're in the States. That's how you'll have to find out. Or you could just cheat and go to the Demented Games website and read up a little bit on the – download the rule book for free. But yeah. I love that. De Havilland and Carter.
Brain farted
there for a minute. And then the different factions within the Guild of Harmony itself. All of those little things, they kind of play into exactly what you were talking about earlier, where it's like you're invested in the characters. You pick who you like most. So for me, when I play the Dickensians, I don't usually use Bill, even though he's a powerhouse, because I'm kind of on Fagin and Dodger's side. I'm not really on Bill and Nancy's side, even though I like the Dickensians. I'm on Fagin's side. So I usually bring a whole bunch of Erkin and Dodger and Oliver, and then that's how I do it, because I'm invested in those characters, and that's one of the that I love about
I kind of like the way in the backstories that Fagin is trying to figure out how to stop Nancy making the kids he once was very fond of into these horrible Erkin, whilst remaining below Bill's radar so he doesn't get his head torn off.
Right.
And possibly even trying to turn Oliver back into what he was, you know. So he's got this kind of what do I do, you know? He's appearing to be kind of the loyal sort of right hand of Bill.
And yet he's almost heroic.
Exactly. Yeah, I kind of like that. He's almost a nice chap. Well, he's a nice chap. He's not an evil man. But, you know, I kind of like that is that the faction which is the most evil in the game, which is the Dickensians probably, has people in it who are good.
They're just misunderstood.
The faction which is ostensibly good, being the servants of the engine, actually has their leader is a bit of a bastard. You know,
right. So I'm going to jump one more, Eric, real quick, and then I'll let you grab another question. So here's my big one, because this is how I in part fell in love with Twisted. I posted the picture when I was newbie in the Twisted Facebook group, and I posted a picture of my gigantic Aztec temple, and I was like, I'm gonna play a game of Twisted on this, because the book says the node is where people groups had sprung up. Well, people groups die off and the engine doesn't. And then for those of you wondering if you want to get in a game where the creators are passionate, Peter writes me a special scenario just for that board. I was like, sweet, I'm special. I feel so we played it, but that lead up goes into this. What if any are the plans to kind of expand that? Because the moment that I thought about that, I looked around my game room and I said, ooh, look, that's Tokyo. And ooh, look over here, that's San Francisco. And oh, New York. And I've got all of these places in my mind. Yeah, yeah. Like, there's got to be a node there.
Well, that's one of the things that one of the reasons that we developed the nodes the way we did is that it gives you that flexibility to put one wherever you want. You go, okay, we want to do a Japanese faction. Let's just pop one in Tokyo.
Yes, please.
I know. That's what I like to do that. There are plans afoot for more factions. They're not well developed plans at this point, but they're plans. There's been some vague sketches done of a as yet ill defined US faction, but they're still in one. There's still like one drawing phase for most of these factions. There was we did dabble with Atlanteans, like a faction of.
Okay.
Not sure about that one. That one may have been sort of. We never quite nailed the design we were happy with. That's one of the things that we'd struggle with a bit sometimes is trying to get each faction looking a little bit unique. And we had some plans for the Atlanteans, which are really good. I really liked them. But trying to get the design to actually work was tricky. At the point we were looking at sort of a mashing together Spartans and 17th century sailors, which is kind of a weird match. So if you'd imagine like your Lord Nelson type sailor with a double-breasted suit and a massive Greek helmet, you know, interesting. Getting the design to work was tricky. But there are all sorts of ways to explore it and sorts of things we'd like to push along. It's kind of a matter of time to some degree. Time and finances, as is ever the way, unfortunately, with games.
All right, guys. Well, you heard it here first. Finances. So everybody go buy a whole bunch of stuff from the Demented Games website.
Yeah, we're currently working on, as you know, Mac, solo rules to help people out with
yes.
the current situation, which will be fun. It should be fun. Let you play it on your own, which is great. Yes. So, and it's coming along quite nicely. That'll have its own set of stuff. There might be some miniatures for that as well.
Oh.
There are some new miniatures sculpted in the wings that we haven't actually revealed as yet.
When might they be revealed, do you think?
Oh, I would say in the coming months. Okay. They're all big, essentially. They're all 40 mil base ones, big models. So there's an Egyptian one, there's a Guild one, there's a Dickensian one, and I think... There's four of them, and they're all awesome.
Okay.
and
they're awesome.
Everybody, you hear it here. World breaking news. Soon, new stuff. We didn't even have to ask him, Mac.
I know. He just
Slip
on his own.
Yeah, they probably would have been, had the world not done what it did on Kickstarter a little while ago just to get them funded. Because being big models, of course, there's big. Reasonably large cost involved in getting them done. They're sculpted, they're finished, they just need to be produced. That'll be coming along pretty soon.
Wow, I can't wait to get my hands on them.
Oh, I'm sure we can arrange that.
I have everything, so.
He needs new stuff.
Not anymore, you don't.
Family. No
point. I can think of four you don't have.
That's true. I got to get the family back together, you know.
Actually, strictly speaking, five, because one of them's two models.
I'm okay with that. I am okay with that. All right, Eric, what else you got there, brother?
Well, going back to your placement of the game, what was your decision to make the center point of the game in, you know, out of all the places in the world, Old London? I mean, is it faction related, or was there, you know, a certain reason?
I guess that in the initial discussions about the game, the whole Oliver Twisted thing was a fairly big pivoting point. I mean, okay, well, that's kind of a cool idea. It kind of makes sense. And it'd be kind of fun, you know, to have this little boy, everyone knows as a little sweet blonde kid, as this raging big monster. And they can't go past that. That's just fantastic, you know. So that kind of placed the game immediately in London because it had to be.
Okay.
Plus, London's a cool place. You know, I've been there a few times and it's awesome. You know, if you ever want to put a story into anywhere, that's the place to put it because there's so much you can bolt into it. You know, it's a city that's full of stories essentially.
And it's really fun to set tables up in London too.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, it gives you that sort of closed-in feel that I wanted as well. The game's been designed to be played fairly close terrain, not sort of big open tables. It can work on big open tables. I've never actually played it that way, but it can work. But it's best in you know, really tight spaces.
Well, it kind of alleyways.
It kind of lends its way to the narrative of the game itself. Is, you know, me and Mac always talk about your tables. Tell a story. Yeah. Tell a story with your environment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and to some degree, a lot of the mechanics of the game have been developed with that heavy terrain in mind. Like the ranges of guns are all quite short. And that's quite deliberate in that you don't want people, you know, setting up lines of fire down this street and just camping at one end of it, shooting each other. So I've made everything quite short range with the exception of a couple of guns. It forces people to get close to one another and, you know, nothing drives the story along more than people getting involved in it. You know, if you just sitting across the table shooting at one another, that's no fun at all.
Yeah.
And, I mean, really, I'd kind of design Twisted to some degree with the idea that killing your opponent is actually not necessarily the best thing to be doing.
The whole for us when we play, there's always an objective because each game that we play is a piece in a story that we're telling, even though it's not really set up as a campaign system, so you're not gaining things and finding things maybe yet, hopefully.
Right.
But we always play it that way, the next story and the next story and the next story. That's what we like to do. And it really lends itself to that.
Okay. Yeah, it does. It definitely lends itself to being continuous stories. I mean, the book itself has that 10-mission campaign in it.
Right.
Which is developed with that in mind, you know, kind of playing through a game and continuously playing through the game.
Absolutely.
I would like to do more in the way of narrative campaigns for it as well. I think it kind of lends itself to that.
Oh, we in our group, and we have a very peculiar group. Most people's game groups, they go to the same game store and live in the same, at least, state. We don't. Eric is 18 hours away from me.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
The rest of our crew is at minimum 4 hours away, but we've all had intense discussions about how narrative it is. I know there are a lot of games, well, maybe not a lot, but there are games that they approach the concept of their game with, hey, we're narrative, we're going to tell a story, it's a campaign-based game, your guys get stronger, yada, yada. But for me, anyway, Twisted, even without the quote-unquote campaign mechanic where you start out with your guy's nobody and then he progressively gets stronger, it still, to me, tells a better story. And okay. I couldn't put my finger on why exactly, but the interactions, some of it is the interplay within the factions, and then there's the interplay between the factions, and then there's the engine, which is the next element, and it's just like story piled on story piled on story, and it's like you're just wading through this stuff going, oh, I want to tell this part of the story, and now I want to tell this part, and oh my gosh, I can't run out of stuff over here.
That's probably, and to some degree, the backstories that I was kind of keen to put into the book a lot of. As you may have noticed, there's quite a lot of fluff in there.
Yeah.
It's even built in a lot in the rules where you have those little introductory paragraphs to a section of the rule book. I put fluff in there. Everywhere I could put it, I put it essentially. You know, if it's almost down to the point where there's a section at the back of the rule, which is the explanation of the abilities. Each of those has a little bit of fluff with it, just a little tiny backstory. And each of those just sometimes drives an interesting idea in your head. You go, oh, that's interesting. You know.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of, I guess, the sort of games that I'd played, similar to what you're talking about, like Necromunda and Mordheim and stuff, they never really drove the story along very much. They gave you this kind of story, which is, you know, Ruin City, blah, 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 Hive World, blah, blah, blah. And then it's kind of left it up to you. And I think those games could have been a lot more interesting. And would have been a lot more interesting if they'd spent more time on the stories on them.
Yes.
They never really did that. They still don't do it to some degree. They give you the faction kind of
Web,
but really no look into how the faction operates, I don't think, which is odd for the Games Workshop. They're just so good at that sort of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And those were two games that I thoroughly enjoyed when both of them came out, the original creation of Necromunda and Mordheim.
Yeah, Necromunda was great fun. I thoroughly enjoyed that game.
I played my pieces to death in that game. Man,
I've still got my original Escher gang sitting in my cabinet here.
I was an Orlok player.
I had them.
Everybody had them right out of the box, out of the starter box. And Goliath.
Oh, yeah. I bought the metal ones because the plastic ones are a bit sad.
Yeah, they left a little bit to be desired, but the metal ones were actually pretty good.
They were good, yeah.
My son bought me the new Orloks.
They look nice.
Yeah, they're pretty nice. So what do you have up next?
Well, let's see. I think next up, and we've kind of touched on this a little bit with you, Peter, but we kind of wanted to know, what do you like to play? What is on your table?
Oh, okay. Well, not a lot at the moment in terms of war games. I do like to get a game of Twisted in when I can. That's always fun.
I hear there's some solo rules coming out you'll be able to play.
Yes, 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 they are. Yes, you'll play that shortly. I've played ND weekly still with the same guys I've been playing with since high school. So
Wow.
We worked the other day. We cracked our 40th anniversary of playing D&D together.
Wow, that's awesome.
Last year. So we played with them weekly, basically every week for 40 years, which is kind of weird. When we can't get a group together for D&D, we'll often play games like Zombicide, which is a lovely, lovely game. If you haven't played it, I recommend it.
I have my Zombicide zombies on the table standing in for Bludgeoners.
Yeah, I particularly like the Green Horde version of that. That's so much fun.
I picked that one up too. I haven't had the opportunity to play that one yet, though.
It's fun. It's good. It's terrifying when the Horde turns up, but it's fun.
Oh, yeah.
But other than that, I've dabbled with a few other games. I keep meaning to try Tribal by Man of Press. That looks interesting. I know Ara, the developer of that, quite well.
The graphic designer, because I just got
I did their artwork.
Yeah, I just got my copy of Tribal the other day.
I haven't actually played it yet, but it looks like fun. I've seen it played. So that'll be interesting. Other than that, I don't play a lot of games. I paint a lot of miniatures still. I buy a lot of miniatures still, rather more correctly.
Playing them. Oh, so you have the same problem all the rest of us have too. You buy
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. The purchase rate compared to paint rate is exponential. The J curve there.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's
kind of. There hasn't been much that's caught my eye lately. I don't know what it is. I think part of that is just the design of stuff's not quite grabbing me at the moment. There's a few bits and pieces that I don't like, but.
Well, I would imagine that when you've written your own game, and I certainly have no frame of references because I'm not writing a I'm not writing a game. I have too many games that other people have written to play. So I can't write my own. But I would imagine that when you're writing your own game, you're writing everything that you think is the best thing in a game. So to compete with that.
Yeah, so that's one of the things that would inform the development of Twisted is the game that I would like to play.
Right.
And working on the assumption that there were other gamers like me around town. that wasn't this unique unicorn that nobody else liked this sort of game. because there wasn't much out there at the time like that. I mean, everything I tried to get that kind of feeling out of kind of failed a bit. I found that the Infinity game, which whilst a really good game, was just a bit too complex for my taste.
It was for me too.
Yeah, it's fun, but it's people who are really good at it can thrash you without you even thinking about it. And it's not me. But it's interesting. One thing I kind of like for Twisted is it's a reasonably easy game to pick up. I think it's reasonably straightforward. Once you get head around the mechanics, there's not much that you have to worry about. And the randomness in it means that even if you're not the world's best player, you've still got half a chance. And I kind of wanted that. I didn't want anyone to feel like they were just going to get pants that at army list writing, so to speak. I've heard that happening in other games.
I would definitely say it's easy to pick up because I demo it at conventions I go to. So when we were at Siege of Augusta in January, we probably had. I mean, we were pretty much nonstop busy for 2 days running demos, and it was really easy for people to get it. And it was it's very different in that a lot of skirmish games don't use the full polyhedral dice set, D6 or D10 or D8. So on initial approach to the table, somebody might look at it and go, oh, wait a second, that's a lot of different dice. But it's really, I think the different dice is kind of what helps it become more narrative because it's almost like you're playing a D&D character.
Yeah.
Because you have the whole dice set. Your weapon does a little bit different damage and you use a different die and all of that. So
it's kind of one of the things I wanted in it is that I wanted every weapon to have the ability at least to have that weapons do more or less damage depending on what weapon they were, It always seemed odd to me that a sword would do the same damage as a club or the same damage as a knife. Having that range of dice available to me, you can make interesting weapons out of it and interesting effects and all sorts of things. And using a D20 as the base dice, which is, as we all know, a very swingy dice, it's all over the shop. You can't predict what it's going to do. it allowed me the flexibility to make characters on paper very different to one another. So just looking at the pure numbers of, say, Bill Sykes versus an Erkin, he's much, much stronger than they are, you know, and much tougher and much better fighter. But Erkin can still hurt him,
right?
Because of the dice, you know.
Yeah.
If Bill rolls a 2 and Erkin rolls a 17, Erkin's hit him, you know.
That's right.
Whether he hurts him or not is another matter. But, you know.
That's another matter entirely. He's only angered but Bill.
That kind of came from my particular love of a mechanic confrontation the old French game used to use, which is when you're attacking somebody, no matter what it was, massive monster or a, you know, a small model, if you rolled 2 sixes to hit, you killed it. So you'd end up with this, you know, 100-point raging beast attack one of your Griffin conscripts who promptly rolls a 6, takes it out. Magnificent. you can never be sure that by taking these massive, big, point-sink monsters, you're going to win the game. You probably wouldn't. And it's kind of their balancing mechanic in some degree is that if you were to take a swarm of, you know, of light troops, your chances of rolling 6s are kind of increased dramatically, but
sure,
you're going to get killed a lot on the way.
Right.
But if you took big stuff and the opposite, you know, if you took 3 big monsters, there's every chance you'd get 6 out of the right game pretty quickly. So it's this kind of balancing mechanic, which I kind of like. It also meant that your no model felt useless.
Which is very important in any game.
Absolutely. I hate it when there's a model that's just, why would anyone want this except to paint it and put it on their shelf?
Yeah.
And you know, you get games, I haven't played enough 40K to make any sort of informed judgment, but I get the impression there are some troop types in that you just don't take from reading stuff online. They just, why would you bother to take AX? Because it's no good, you know. Well, that right there is a design problem in my mind, is that, you know, everything should be worthwhile taking for some reason or another.
Right. You got anything else there?
No, what do you got there, Mac?
Well, I just have one more thing, Peter, and I wanted, can you tell everybody where they can pick up their copies of Twisted and all of the faction boxes and all of the miniatures, because that's what everybody needs to buy. Because once you buy one box, you're just going to want the rest of them anyway. So just skip the step of just buying one and just get it all.
Exactly, yeah. Well, look, in the US, it's Discover Games, as you mentioned earlier. Awesome shop. Support them. Buy it from there if you're in the US. We sell it obviously online ourselves. Shipping from Australia is pretty reasonable, but you know, we prefer you buy it from the local stores.
Right.
We're just working on the UK at the moment with some announcements to come on that in the next few days. We've got at least one stockist over there, hopefully two fairly soon.
Awesome.
That'll help. But we've got some really good UK customers. I'd really appreciate people buying the stuff from around the world. No, particularly for the UK guys, it's difficult because of the taxes and charges they get slung with on the way in. You know, not so much for you US guys, but we'd rather you bought from Discover Games because support the retailers who support us.
That's we do. Bit. I can get it in 2 days when I buy from Discover. So. I want it, and I want it right now. So this one, this is going to be probably the hardest question. We asked this one in our last interview too, and I hope you can answer it. But who's your favorite character in Twisted?
Favorite character.
Yeah. Favorite child, as I like to say.
Look, it's kind of a weird thing. It's almost split in two for me. My favorite model, which is separate to character, would be Indigo Forward. I just love that miniature.
Fantastic.
I designed that one kind of myself to some degree. And that pose is everything I ever wanted in a miniature. I went, that's it. That's my miniature.
Okay.
Favorite character. Jeez, that's really tricky. I like so many of them. I like Fagin, like you say, because of his kind of weird. The ones I like are the ones I like to write about. So I like Fagin because he's fun to write about. Him and Dodger and that little biplane they've got is kind of cute. I actually really like also the interplay between Gretel and Hansel and Nouveau, which you may have picked up on. The servants, that's a split in the servants, which you mentioned earlier. But probably my current favorite would have to be probably Horus, I think.
I did not see that coming.
Yeah, Horus is awesome. Horus is just kind of...
The word pompous leaps to mind. Yeah. In title.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's just this kind of arrogant git who has no idea what he's doing.
Shouting orders to everyone.
Yeah, shouting orders to everyone and, you know, kind of just, you know, basically trying to prove to his father that he is awesome by completely cocking everything up. he's just great fun. He's kind of like... if you're Flashman, you know, the character, where he's kind of this guy who wishes he was brave, but he kind of isn't. and you know, we'll start a fight and then promptly bugger off the other direction.
Well, we're getting all Horace's dark secrets are coming out in this one.
Yeah. I just imagine Horace, you know, sort of, get them lads, let's start this fight. And then as soon as it gets a bit nasty, right, then I'll just be over here.
I'll be heading back to the boat to make sure everything is still there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I really like that. I think one of the stories in the Egyptian book where he turns up at the boat where Carter's loading and kind of skids up in his, you know, steam carriage and kind of spills goods everywhere and hops out. So he goes, I'm here.
We can begin. I have arrived.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, and the fact that Carter wasn't even expecting him or knew who he was, just
right.
Horace still kind of thought, I'm the leader of this expedition now.
That's right. It's a great model too. I love the model. So
it is good, isn't it?
Yeah. It is. It's really good. It's a great model. Yeah. And I don't even play the Scions.
Yeah, it is. It's a fun one. The Scions have some really good miniatures.
They really do. Well, all of them are great. And of course, we're biased. We're extremely biased, but that's okay. It's our show. We can be biased.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We have that option. Peter, man, thanks so much for taking
some time
to hang out with us. We really appreciate it. And we will, of course, keep doing our very best to do everything we can to promote Twisted here in the States.
Thank you very much.
And hopefully, as I've been talking to Simon in the UK, that he can convince his fellow chaps over there to get that into some stores over there as well. That would be great.
Seem to be organizing themselves rather nicely. So,
yes, they
should, do. That should come to fruition fairly soon. We'll certainly have some announcements on that when it does.
I certainly hope so. But for us guys, remember you can check us out on YouTube on our Coastal Con channel. You can check out the Coastal Con Facebook group. You can also check out the Indie Invasion Facebook page, or you can email us at indieinvasion@gmail.com. So those are the places that you can catch us and to listen. What's that, Eric?
That's where you can find us.
That's where you can find us. I'm sorry. I apologize. You can also find... I'm probably never going to live that one down now, right? No one's going to follow me forever.
I take my jabs when I can.
You can also find the podcast itself on just about everything. We're on Google Play, Spotify, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, Podbean, TuneIn. We are trying to invade the entire world promoting all of the indie games that we love. And because the reality is, all of these wonderful independent game developers, if there's one thing that you get out of them, it is a massive amount of passion. And we love that when we dive into games. It's an awesome thing. Eric, you want to escort us out?
I will take us out. So we'll talk to you guys later. And remember, prepare for the invasion.
That's right. See you later, guys.